from time to time. So Hitler wandered off the reservation in the 1930s, and that's why World War II started, although it was a deliberate means to take it down. And the same with Russia and China. These are geopolitical games. These are not accidental. They are contrived. And people are awakening to the fact that their politicians are powerless in this respect.
Thank you. We're going to unfortunately have to end it there. We have to let Len Padopic get back to his home, hopefully. Len Padopic, thank you very much. Former British Member of Parliament from London. Thank you. And also from London, Clive Menzies, researcher and political economy analyst there from London also. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tafoya and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with verses 97 to 99 of chapter Nisan from the Holy Quran, recited by Hashim Rouhani.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Innal ladhina tawaffahumu الملائكة ظالمي أنفسهم قالوا فيما كنتم قالوا كنا مستضعفين ضعفين في الأرض قالوا ألم تكن أرض الله واسعة فتهاجروا فيها فأولئك مأواهم جهنم وساءت مصيرا إلا المستضعفين من الرجال والنساء سبيلا فأولئك عسى الله أن يعفو عنهم وكان الله عفوا غفورا صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Surely as for those whom angels cause to die while they are unjust to their souls, they shall say, "In what state were you?" They shall say, "We were weak in the earth." They shall say, "Was not Allah's earth spacious, so that you should have migrated therein?" So these it is whose abode is hell, and it is an evil resort. Except the weak from among the men and the children, who have not in their power the means, nor can they find a way to escape. So these, it may be, Allah will pardon them, and Allah is pardoning, forgiving. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran says its comprehensive cooperation agreement with Venezuela is a turning point in their relations. Tensions flare up between the US and China over balloons, which Washington says Beijing has sent into American airspace for spying. And the European Union vows to support Ukraine in its war with Russia, but says Kiev's accession to the bloc will not be quick. Top story, Tehran says a comprehensive cooperation agreement between Iran and Venezuela is a turning point in relations between the two countries. Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, who is visiting Caracas, made the remarks during a meeting with Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Amir Abdullahian said the implementation of bilateral deals with Caracas would boost ties further. Maduro, for his part, said the experience of the two countries in dealing with shared issues necessitates, that is, strengthening relations. The two sides also stressed the need to stand up against foreign pressure and defend their national interests. Emir Abdullahian earlier held talks with Venezuela's vice president, among other top officials, and discussed ways to strengthen ties in different fields. Five Palestinians have been injured in the Aghabat Jabr camp in the occupied West Bank, where Israeli forces have surrounded a Palestinian home. The regime soldiers have reportedly stormed the camp with heavy machinery. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, joined us earlier with more details.
For the sixth consecutive day, Israeli forces had been imposing a curfew or a closure on the Aqbat Jabr refugee camp in Ariha because the Israelis claim that a Palestinian opened fire at an Israeli restaurant near illegal settlement built in Ariha. The Israelis claim that this Palestinian who opened fire is originally from Aqbat Jabr refugee camp, every day Israeli forces raid Aqaba Jabr and prevent Palestinians to move freely. But what's happening since the early hours of this morning is that Israeli forces raided Aqaba Jabr, surrounded a house there. They claim that the Palestinian who opened fire at a restaurant is from Aqaba Jabr, and they are ordering his father and brothers to hand their son to the Israeli forces. As we are receiving now, all the entrances of Ariha and the main roads leading to Ariha, not only Aqaba Jabr, are completely closed. Israeli forces are not allowing anyone to enter or to leave the area. Three Palestinians had been wounded during this operation. And it seems that the Israeli forces insist to arrest this Palestinian before leaving Aqaba Jabr and Ariha.
Now, the situation has also been tense in the West Bank city of Nablus, where Israeli forces killed a Palestinian. They claimed that the Palestinian man had attacked troops stationed at an outpost. That happened on Friday, the same day Israeli forces injured dozens of Palestinians protesting against illegal settlements in the West Bank. They targeted Palestinians with live bullets and tear gas. So far this year, Israeli forces have killed 36 Palestinians in the occupied territories. Turning elsewhere, China has accused U.S. media and politicians of using the recent balloon incident as pretext to launch a smear campaign against Beijing. The Chinese Foreign Ministry issued a statement after the U.S. Secretary of State cancelled a planned trip to the country over allegations that Beijing flew a spy balloon over the U.S. China had already expressed regret over the issue, blaming winds for pushing what it called a civilian airship into U.S. airspace. On Saturday, China further said that it never violated the territory and airspace of any sovereign nation. The ministry also emphasized the need for maintaining communication channels at all levels to deal with some unexpected situations. Antony Blinken issued a personal note to his Chinese counterpart after the discovery of the balloon over the U.S. state of Montana.
In my call today with Director Wang Yi, I made clear that the presence of this surveillance balloon in U.S. airspace is a clear violation of U.S. sovereignty and international law, that it's an irresponsible act, and that the PRC's decision to take this action on the eve of my planned visit is detrimental to the substantive discussions that we were prepared to have.
Blinken further said that the U.S. remains committed to diplomatic engagement with China and that he would make a trip to Beijing once conditions are favorable. Meanwhile, the Pentagon said it has spotted a second similar balloon flying over Latin America. Beijing had already denied the U.S. accusation of spying. It said the balloon was used for meteorological purposes and had unintentionally escaped into U.S. airspace. Emmanuel Pastrich is the president at the Asia Institute and joins us now live from Tokyo. Emmanuel, it's like watching a comedy show with these American U.S. officials when it comes to the accusations about China violating U.S. territorial integrity with a weather balloon that drifted off course. I mean, China has satellites in space that can be used for surveillance if it wanted to spy on the U.S.
Right. Well, I think the ultimate goal here is to degrade the political discussion to the level of kindergarten. There's a lot of spying between the United States and China. Increasingly, it's not really about countries at all, but rather private intelligence firms that sell information of a very often dangerous nature to the highest bidder. So it doesn't really have anything to do with spying. I think the most important takeaway from this incident is that it is the Pentagon which is telling us whether it happened, you know, what really happened, we don't know, that's making the decision. And then the White House and the Department of State are then following up on what's already been decided by the Pentagon. This is exactly what we're seeing in the case of Ukraine as well, in which the backroom boys, the Pentagon, decide first what the United States is going to do, and then it's fed to the White House, National Security Council, and to the Secretary of State. And ultimately, it means that you're increasingly having a military running the country.
When we hear, Emmanuel, these U.S. accusations of China intruding or violating American territorial integrity, this is the same country that has violated the territorial integrity of just about every country in the world, is it not?
Including the United States, I would add. So essentially, we have a system which is out of control. And now, sadly, this relatively tiny group of people within the military and the arms contractors are making policy for the entire country, feeding it to the politicians, and they have really no brakes on them. They're going, in the case of Ukraine, basically any weapon, except for nuclear weapons so far, although that might come soon, is being fed. In the case of China, a country, I think as a whole, Chinese have a relatively positive view of the United States. Many Chinese have family in the United States. It was not a hostile relationship, but billions and billions of dollars are being poured into making it, hyping it up to be some sort of enemy. And Blinken's trip is totally logical. He should go very frequently, canceling it over this one minor matter out of, you know, thousands of similar ones, really shows us that the whole a system is falling apart. The wheels are coming off of the cart.
Right. And then finally, Emmanuel, during the during the long course of this Chinese weather balloon, why didn't which is of course difficult to steer and which was used for perhaps espionage or surveillance maybe 70 or 80 years ago. Why didn't the other countries lodge complaints with Beijing?
Right. Well, I don't really buy the story to start with. I think there's all sorts of information which is bought and sold between the United States and China and other countries, and that weather balloons are the least likely. So other countries didn't complain because other countries know that these weather balloons are insignificant in terms of the gathering of information. That's my guess. So basically, other countries have governments which are slightly more functional, right? They're not engaged in this sort of comedy of errors, this circus. I mean, this is what we had with the General Minnan's comments about war with China by 2025. I mean, it looked like people are chomping at the bit to start a war as soon as possible with a country which, as I just stated, is not hostile towards the United States. I find, in general, Chinese have a more positive impression of the United States than many other countries. So to go out of your way to sort of pick a fight, start a war, let alone starting a war with both China and Russia, which basically may be the end of humanity, but certainly would mean the end of the United States. I think it suggests a certain psychopathic mentality.
Thank you for your contribution. Emmanuel Pastrich is the president at the Asia Institute, joining us live from the Japanese capital of Tokyo. Now, the Philippines has allowed the U.S. to boost its military presence there by giving Washington access to four more bases in the country. The move is part of Washington's attempts to gain strategic advantage over China in the region. Washington and Manila are concerned about over Beijing's increasing assertiveness in the South China Sea, and China has slammed the U.S.'s increasing military presence in the region as a provocation.
The United States is ramping up its efforts to counter China's growing regional power. Amid Washington's rising tensions with Beijing over the South China Sea and Taiwan, Washington and Manila agreed on plans to accelerate the full implementation of the, quote, Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, with the full agreement to designate four new agreed locations in strategic areas of the Philippines. The deal would allow Washington to deploy military equipment and rotate its troops to four more bases. Washington has currently five bases in the Philippines. The two sides also agreed on the substantial completion of the project in existing agreed locations.
Today, Secretary Galvez and I also reaffirmed our mutual defense treaty commitments. And we'd note that the mutual defense treaty applies to armed attacks on either of our armed forces, public vessels, or aircraft anywhere in the South China Sea or the West Philippine Sea.
According to experts, Washington's access to those bases could provide U.S. forces a strategic position from which to mount operations in the event of a conflict over Chinese Taipei or in the South China Sea. China has criticized the U.S. for its plan to increase its military presence in the Philippines, warning that granting the U.S. greater access to military bases by Manila could hurt regional stability and raise tensions. The move is part of U.S. plans to encircle China's maritime border in anticipation of a war over Taiwan, which Beijing considers as its own. Last year, tensions rose to unprecedented levels after the then U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited the island. China has repeatedly warned against any attempt that delegitimizes its national sovereignty. Furthermore, China claims sovereignty over virtually all of the South China Sea, which is also claimed in part by Brunei, Vietnam, Malaysia, and the Philippines. The waters are believed to sit atop vast reserves of oil and gas.
Moving on, the EU Commission chief says there is no rigid timeline for Kiev's accession to the European Union.
There are no rigid timelines, but there are goals that you have to reach. Reforms, for example, to improve a situation in the candidate country to then reach the accession negotiations and the accession itself.
Von der Leyen praised Kiev's determination to meet EU recommendations despite being at war with Russia. Elsewhere in her remarks, the EU Commission chief said a new package of sanctions against Moscow is on its way to make Russia pay for its actions in Ukraine. She said technology will be targeted in the fresh sanctions to curb Russia's ability to produce drones. Meanwhile, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky urged the EU to accelerate its arms supply to Kiev.
If weapons are accelerated, namely long-range weapons, we will not only not withdraw from Bakhmut, we will begin to deoccupy Donbas, which has been occupied since 2014.
Zelensky also said Kiev will not surrender Bakhmut and will fight as long as it can. This comes as Kiev's Western allies pledge more weapons, mainly sophisticated and long-range arms, to Ukraine. Russia has repeatedly warned the West's military support for Ukraine will only prolong the war and increase the suffering of its people. This as Russia ramps up pressure on Ukrainian forces in eastern battlegrounds and also in the northeast and south. That brings an end to the World Bulletin for this hour.
Congratulations to everyone on the occasion of 13th of Rajab, the birth anniversary of the Commander of the Faithful and the Leader of the Pious, Prophet Muhammad's divinely appointed vicegerent, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. Here in the Islamic Republic of Iran, today is also Father's Day. We at Arabi English Radio congratulate all Muslims on this auspicious occasion.
On Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite, words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me, in full, in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
Imam Ali, peace upon him, the multidimensional genius. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Salam, dear listeners, and heartiest felicitations to you all on one of the most blessed days of the year. Today is the 13th of Rajab, on which God Almighty's symbolic house in Mecca, the Holy Kaaba, came alive. It is the day when the most sanctified place on planet Earth became the site of birth of a person who was God's most exalted creation after Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. To be more precise, today we are celebrating the birthday of the commander of the faithful, the leader of the pious, the symbol of justice, the epitome of valor, the model of magnanimity, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, the divinely designated vicegerent of the Seal of Messengers. Please stay with us for an exclusive program in this regard. Allah collected from hard, soft, sweet and sour earth, clay which he dripped in water till it got pure, and kneaded it with moisture till it became gluey. From it he carved an image with curves, joints, limbs and segments. He solidified it until it dried up for a fixed time and a known duration. Then he blew into it out of his spirit, whereupon it took the pattern of a human being with mind that governs him, intelligence which he makes use of, limbs that serve him, organs that change his position, sagacity that differentiates between truth and untruth, tastes and smells, colors and species. He is a mixture of clays of different colors, cohesive materials, divergent contradictories, and differing properties like heat, cold, softness, and hardness, grief, and joy. What you heard is a vividly detailed description of the finest form of creation by God Almighty, that is, Adam, the father of the human race. Yet, this is not a passage from God's final revelation, the Noble Quran, or from any other previously revealed heavenly scripture. Then, whose words are these that draw for us the perfect picture of the creation of Adam by the one and only Creator? A good question indeed. Since we are on the threshold of the 13th of Rajab, the day on which was born in the Holy Kaaba built by Adam when he was sent on earth, one of the greatest sons of Adam. After recounting how Iblis, the genie, was cast out as Satan from the assembly of the angels for disobeying God's command to prostrate to Adam, the person who has given such a remarkable description of the first man's creation and the purpose of creation informs us in one of his famous sermons in the book Nahjul Balagha. Therefore, Allah made Adam dwell in a house where he made his life pleasant and his stay safe, and he cautioned him of Iblis and his enmity. Then his enemy, Iblis, envied his abiding in paradise. So he changed his conviction into wavering and determination into weakness. He thus covered his happiness into fear and his prestige into shame. Then Allah offered to Adam the chance to repent, taught him words of his mercy, promised him return to his paradise and sent him down to the place of trial and procreation of progeny. The passages that we recited to you are self-explanatory, and they inform us of the choosing of prophets from the progeny of Adam for the guidance of human societies towards God, truth, salvation, and paradise. As the peerless person whose birth anniversary we are celebrating today says, Allah never allowed his creation to remain without a prophet, deputized by him, or a book sent down from him, or a binding argument. In this way, ages passed by and times rolled on, till Allah deputized Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, as his last prophet in fulfillment of his promise. We are then told that the Prophet of Islam, while departing from the mortal world, left behind God's final revelation, the Noble Quran, along with his Immaculate Ahlul Bayt, as beacons of guidance for human societies, and popularly known as the Thaqalain, or the two priceless things. The identity and name of the person who enlightens our minds with such a vast ocean of facts should now be clear to us, because no one else was born in the Holy Kaaba except Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, the first cousin, ward, son-in-law, and divinely designated vicegerent of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. He was indeed the prime source for the mission of the Seal of Messengers, as well as the accounts of the prophets of the past, including the reasons for the casting out of Iblis as Satan and Adam's error that brought him down to earth. Then how come he so vividly describes Adam's creation from different forms of clay, to the amazement of scholars and scientists alike, as if he was an eyewitness to the whole process of evolution? It is here that the famous hadith of the Prophet of Islam comes to our rescue, when he says, I was the prophet when Adam was in the state of water and clay. The prophet also has said, I and Ali are created of the same light. Another hadith says God created the light of Imam Ali, peace upon him, thousands of cosmic years before Adam's creation. Now, it should be clear that Prophet Muhammad and Imam Ali, peace upon them, were not ordinary humans, although they were descendants of Adam. They were, in fact, beings of celestial light that God Almighty created before creating the universe. Here, it will be repetitive to go into details of the miraculous parting of the walls of the Kaaba and their closing moments later on, the 13th of Rajab, to allow Fatima bint Asad, peace upon her, of the monotheist Hashemite clan to enter its hallowed precincts, as she implored the Lord Most High to ease her pangs of delivery. The Arab pagans, who had polluted the primordial house of monotheism with idols, were flabbergasted. They tried to break the door with crowbars, but the locks and the wooden beams held steadfast. 3 days later, the Arab idolaters were again stupefied when the same miracle occurred at the Kaaba as its walls parted and closed to allow Fatima bint Asad, peace upon her, to step out with a radiant boy in her arms. To the further bewilderment of the heathen Arabs, a calm and unperturbed Abu Talib stood at hand to smilingly greet his virtuous wife. Along with him was his nephew, the son of Abdullah, his deceased brother, who gently stepped forward to take into his arms his infant cousin. It was then that the baby boy opened his eyes. As the eyes of the two cousins caught each other, there were smiles of acquaintance on both the faces, as if the two were meeting after a period of separation. The sight was indeed dazzling, as light mirrored light. The infant moved his lips and seemed to be expressing voiceless words when the elder cousin whispered something in his tender ears. Here is a famous saying from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. O Ali, Allah has created me and you from his light. He created Adam and put that light into Adam. This light reached Abdul Muttalib and then it split. Thus, I was in Abdullah and you were in Abu Talib. Nubuwwah, that is prophethood, does not befit anyone other than me, while velayat, that is the office of the vicegerent, does not befit anyone other than you. Whoever denies your vicegerency denies my prophethood. And whoever denies my prophethood, Allah will throw him down on his nose into the fire. These words are ample proof of the peerless position of Imam Ali, peace upon him. No wonder the Prophet had said, I and Ali are the fathers of this Ummah. This does not mean biological fathers, but it means spiritual fathers, since without faith in these two enlightened personalities, a person is neither a Muslim nor the one who has completely submitted to God, let alone considered a mu'min or the one who has attained true and perfect belief. This is the reason the Islamic Republic of Iran every year celebrates the birthday of Imam Ali, peace upon him, as Father's Day, in order to make its citizens better fathers for the proper grooming of children as per the guidelines of the Prophet and the infallible Imams. A brief radio program cannot properly describe the multidimensional personality of Imam Ali, peace upon him, the person who transcends history and historical developments. He embodied all such excellent qualities as piety, patience, prudence, bravery, generosity, magnanimity, modesty, wisdom, knowledge, justice, insight, eloquence of speech, etc., to the extent that humanity will forever remain indebted to him. No wonder the Prophet has said, whoever wants to see Adam in his knowledge, Noah in his resolve, Abraham in his prudence, Moses in his awe, and Jesus in his piety, should look at Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. The late Christian scholar of Lebanon, George Jordagh, has written a series of excellent books on Imam Ali, peace upon him, calling him the voice of human justice. After discussing in detail the thoughts and teachings of the Greek scholars, Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, George Jordagh has focused upon the dynamics taught to humanity by Imam Ali, peace upon him, and hailed him as the greatest of them all. This Christian writer has written a separate book on the French Revolution in which he says, "What Imam Ali, peace upon him, taught to mankind over a millennium ago is more elaborate and humanitarian than the libraries and civil rights that emerged in Europe and the West. Imam Ali, peace upon him, formulated such firm rules and presented such solid views for the rights of the human beings and the welfare of the human society that their roots penetrate the depth of the earth while their branches extend up to the sky. All the social sciences prevalent at present mostly confirm these views and principles. Although these modern social sciences may be given many times and may be presented in various forms, their object is one. It means the human being should be protected from oppression and there should be formed a society which should protect human rights in a better way, a society in which human dignity should be respected and the freedom of world and action should be safe to such an extent that none is hurt. Imam Ali, peace upon him, had clearly understood that it will be very dangerous to divide the people into two classes and to prefer one of them to another. This will retard the intellects, create malice in the spirits, and introduce oppression and injustice in the judgments and transactions, and all sorts of mischiefs and corruptions will appear. The result will be that ambition for life will die and the people will become pessimistic and entertain ill will towards one another. Consequently, ruin will descend on the society. So long as the two classes exist in a society, a conflict between them is inevitable and it will involve the loss of many lives." We once again congratulate our listeners on the birthday of the person who, when he once saw an old Christian begging on the streets, had pension fixed for him from the public treasury after chiding officials for leaving a non-Muslim destitute after he had worked all his life. Before we bid goodbye, here is a wonderful saying from Imam Ali, peace upon him, that shows his absolute cognizance of God. "By Allah, even if I am given all the domains of the seven climes with all that exists under the skies, in order that I may disobey Allah to the extent of snatching one grain of barley from an ant, I would not do it. For me, your world is lighter than the leaf in the mouth of a locust that is chewing it. What has Ali to do with bounties that will pass away and pleasures that will not last? We do seek protection of Allah from the slip of wisdom and the evils of mistakes, and from Him we seek succor."
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Superheroes and Beyond. Part 2.
In a hot night in the summer in the late 1930s, a teenage boy who had recently lost his father in a street fight saw a superhuman character in his dream who had replaced his father. Strong, smart, fast, and protector of security, a superhero that the crisis-stricken American society anxiously waited for so he'd rescue them from the economic problems and injustice of the 1930s.
Fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
Not many people thought that the dream of a teenager would be so influential and leave such a huge impact on the future of a country. The Americans of the 1930s were challenged with social and economic problems, injustice, and crime. They needed a source of power who could put an end to their crises. A superhuman solution should have been found for the problems apparently no human being could solve. That was how Superman, the first superhero of comic stories, became the solution to the crisis. It was the DC company that released the red and blue clad man stories for the first time and started the narratives of a superhero. Superman fought against injustice in American society, corrupt officials and gangsters, and supported the oppressed and miserable people. Every day, American weapons would stoke tensions in the war in Europe, and the U.S. in return would reap a huge economic benefit from selling weapons to the country involved in the war. Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor in the United States served as an excuse to push the public to support Washington's engagement in the war. At that time, Captain America was quite helpful in setting the stage for the U.S. to get involved in the war. All American superheroes fought alongside the U.S. Army against the villain forces who had threatened America. In a period of 20 years after propagating American values, about 78 million children were born during the baby boom. That generation always felt the shadow of a nuclear war. The baby boom generation had become teens who started their activities to take part in society and express their demands. They needed new heroes to shout their demands out loud. As a generation grew up, the crime rates among the youth during the 60s rose. They lived during an economic boost and would never understand their father's concerns. It was like that generation and their parents were born in two different countries and were in two different worlds. They voted for Kennedy as a young and handsome president. They loved the Beatles and gradually started hippie bands.
That's why these children are practicing to...
Hulk, a character who turns into a green monster due to atomic radiation. As he was repelled by society,
he turned into a popular hero for the baby boom generation who felt alienated from their own identities. Marvel's other nuclear hero, and the most popular one during the period, was Spider-Man. Peter Parker, an introvert, thin teenage boy who was from a baby boom generation, turned into a hero with amazing powers after he was bitten by a nuclear radiation-infected spider. Marvel introduced other heroes like Ant-Man, Thor, Iron Man, and X-Men with the same principles. Marvel's new heroes were nervous, complicated characters with a list of deficiencies whose human aspects were magnified and were distinguished from the flawless characters before. The baby boom generation changed society. Following social injustices, the Vietnam War, racism, and the assassination of their popular president Kennedy, the generation triggered a social revolution and questioned American values and causes. During those years, the Cold War reached its pinnacle. The Soviet influence in Vietnam increased, and the U.S. did not want to lag behind the rivalry. People in the U.S. took to the streets to protest the Vietnam War. But the most important superhero in the hero-making industry in the U.S., concurrent with the Vietnam War, was Iron Man, whose real name was Tony Stark. The Vietnam War, with its huge casualties and costs, was one of the shameful decisions in the eyes of Americans, and the opposition had snowballed. Society needed to be convinced. Someone had to sympathize with the people who had lost their sons and daughters. It was Iron Man who was tasked to do so. In the 1960s, he initially supported the U.S. Army's involvement in the Vietnam War, arguing that the U.S. will make a lot of money selling weapons. But gradually, he faced many changes. Increasingly disillusioned with U.S. foreign policy, in the mid-1970s, he expressed remorse for the deaths of people who were killed by the weapons that he made and said he will take revenge for the people who lost their lives, especially for ignorant people like himself.
I saw young Americans killed by the very weapons I created to defend them and protect them, and I saw that I had become part of a system that is comfortable with zero accountability.
What happened over there?
I had my eyes open. I came to realize that I have more to offer this world than just making things to blow up. And that is why, effective immediately, I am shutting down the weapons manufacturer division.
The change in his character was a symbol of change in American society that had become aware of its own identity. The enemies of the superheroes were no longer the Germans, Japanese, communists, or any other foreign entity. The main enemy was inside the United States. During this period, the protests by people of color against racial discrimination spread. Leaders like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. turned into the symbols of resistance against the U.S. structure. The protests were at their highest after the assassination of Malcolm X in 1965. The incidents made Marvel create its first black character named the Black Panther. The scandal caused by President Richard Nixon, his resignation, and high inflation and unemployment rates made things worse.
In Washington, a break-in at the Watergate Hotel was found to involve five men in the pay of the committee to re-elect President Nixon. The burglar's target was the office of the chairman of the Democratic Party. The story was to make the names of two young local reporters from the Washington Post.
The catastrophe following Nixon's corruption case and the Watergate scandal gripped American rulers by the collar. They had realized that public opinion needed to calm down. And just like in the past, the superheroes were the best options. In one of the comic stories in this period, Captain America, with his fake copy, namely the Captain America in the 1950s who fought for the U.S. Army, tells himself, "I've never fought with my own demonic part. A man with patriotic dreams, I'm responsible for the evil he did." Captain America was fighting with a sinister empire that wanted to take control of the U.S. In the end, he captured head of the White House, and by removing his mask, he realized the U.S. president was the head of the evil group. The story is about disgraced Nixon administration. This time, unlike the previous times, the captain didn't become happy after achieving victory, and he abandons the fight. He loses faith in Americans and chooses to become a stateless man. He says, "I've done things that I don't take pride in anymore, but I always tried to serve my country well. Now I can see that the government is serving itself." The bitter taste of those days made Spider-Man stories bitter. Something rare happened in Spider-Man. Mary Jane, Spider-Man's fiancée, was killed in a fight. Spider-Man blamed himself for Mary Jane's death and never stopped reprimanding himself following the incident. It was similar to how Americans felt about their government. Marvel adopted this line and made social criticism in its stories. DC also tried to become aligned with social developments to some extent. So, it introduced a real hero against the power structure in America in its stories. He was the greatest and the eternal boxer, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali won the Olympic gold medal at the age of 20. He was always against the government because of the oppression against the black community. Because of his stance, he didn't join the army so he wouldn't be forced to fight for the U.S. Army in Vietnam. Muhammad Ali was a symbol of resistance against U.S. dominance, and he had become an international figure. And D.C. used the popular hero. In one of the stories, Superman, who's a symbol of America, was defeated by Muhammad Ali in a boxing bout. Later, they made up a team to save the planet from aliens. In the end, Muhammad Ali wins in a boxing competition against the aliens, and Earth was saved. The pictorial story became the best-selling comic in the late 1970s. After Ronald Reagan took office in the 1980s, he made the government smaller but expanded the army. The conflict with the Soviets escalated, and American citizens' nationalistic support boosted thanks to professional media techniques. Reagan, who was formerly a movie star, knew very well how to act like a hero.